Hello.
Hello.
And welcome
to My Favorite Murder.
It's the mini-sode.
Where we read you your stuff.
Don't you love it?
We do.
It's so easy.
It's so easy.
Should I kick this one off?
Do it, Karen.
Hello, everyone. This first email I'm going to read to you, the subject line is, My Dad's 7 Degrees of Murder Separation.
Ew.
Right? Hi, MFM fam. That's what the kids say these days, fam.
Fam.
Yeah. It means family.
Oh, mm-hmm. Great.
Let's just dive in. That's what it says in this email. That's not me. I want to talk about other bullshit forever.
Yeah, me too.
But this person wants to dive in. My dad was helping me move out of my yet another terrible mid-20s apartment a few weeks ago.
Oh, my God.
Can we just take a moment?
Oh, been there then again and then been there again and again.
How about the first studio apartment you live in after you stop living with people?
You
finally live in... That's when I got started getting cats.
The best time of my life was in that little studio in Hollywood, fucking Santa Monica and Western, the worst neighborhood.
Oh, shit, girl.
Yeah, but it was the cutest apartment.
Was it really?
Yes.
It was a hidden gem?
It was one of those old brick ones that are super tall.
So oh, yeah.
It was like an old-timey one.
Oh, did you have brick on the inside of your
mm-hmm.
apartment? Oh, that's
it's
rad.
It's so cute.
Mine was on Grace in off Cahuenga.
Mm.
And I really loved the apartment. I had friends that lived on the 4th floor and I lived on the 2nd floor. And I really love my apartment manager, Polly. What's up, Polly?
Hi.
He was the best. And I would always be late with my rent. And
aww.
He was like, Karen, come on. Come on. I'd be like, okay. And then one time after I stopped drinking, I lost a ton of weight because I wasn't drinking 12 beers every night.
Right.
And he stopped me to say I was too thin and he was worried.
Aww.
And I was like, that's the most beautiful thing you could ever say to any woman. That's not true. And body positivity.
Yes, yes, yes.
The ride was an hour each way and we ran out of things to talk about on the way back. Naturally, I brought up MFM and started sharing with him New Jersey stories from the podcast since that's where we are from.
Hmm.
Turns out this man is the 7 degrees of separation from many high and low profile New Jersey, New York stories. He told me how him and his friends broke into, quote, that asshole John List, end quotes, house, and played floor hockey in the ballroom where List put his family's bodies.
Oh, my God.
The mansion is only 15 minutes from where I grew up. He went on to say how my great-great-some relative knew Charles Lindbergh and thought he killed his baby and tried to cover it up when one of his practical jokes went wrong.
What?
Apparently, Lindbergh had a fucked sense of humor.
Shut the fuck up.
Yes, this is a legend.
I want to hear more.
I know, right? My jaw dropped even further when he finally told me that he had once bought cocaine off a notorious club promoter and murderer, Michael Alig.
Oh, my God.
When my dad used to DJ at the Limelight
Shut
in NYC.
Your fucking
Who is this
mouth.
Man? Who is this man?
Oh, my
How
God.
How old is this man? How available is this man? My dad has worn nothing but freshly ironed Dockers and a polo shirt all my life. And here he is telling me how he used to buy drugs from a murderer. Insane.
Oh, my God.
He even told me how he witnessed a low-profile murder in my hometown and was called as a witness. The stories kept spilling out. Over Memorial Day weekend, I went to my family's house and my dad handed me a stack of super rad vintage true crime novels.
Dude.
In the collection of books was his annotated copies of about the Hillside Strangler, Bundy, Mindhunter, and a bunch of others. I finally learned where my true crime obsession comes
Aww.
From. Side note, when I first went to college in NYC, my dad taught me to stand on the subway platform with my back up to the wall so no one could come up behind me. Pro tip, which kinds of groups of people are threatening / to be aware of when walking around late? That seems problematic. And how to pull a knife on someone quickly. Man, dads are great. Stay sexy and talk to your parents about murder. They might surprise you. Much love, B.
Oh, my God.
Amazing. I think it's so true. Parents are untapped sources.
Yeah.
They don't talk to their kids about stuff like that because it's, you know.
Weird.
Yeah, it's like, it's scary.
Well,
but if you're an adult, if you have your own apartment, your parents will tell you about fucked up shit they know.
Talk to your parents like adults and they'll talk to you like an adult too. Like ask them questions about their lives because you just don't do that as a kid. As someone's child, you don't ask them questions about their lives and then you find out all these interesting things.
That's right. And you can actually say, I'm preparing your biography.
Right.
You will die soon.
Yeah.
Please tell me everything
while
you still have the chance.
Exactly.
How's your arthritis? Do you need some Boniva?
What did you do in high school? That was creepy. Okay.
Back in the pioneer days.
I have a dad, one too.
Mm.
My dad worked for a kidnapping.
I have a dad.
That's
what I thought you were saying.
Too. My dad worked for a kidnapping rapist.
Ooh.
Hey, what's up? I used to be so jealous of all the murderinos whose relatives told them of their personal hometown murders until it finally happened to me.
Hey.
Last weekend, my dad and I were going out of town on a 3-hour drive to visit my sick grandma when the unthinkable happened. My dad asked me to put on my, quote, murder cast I'm always listening to and telling him about. Nervously, I searched for the perfect debut episode to ease him in, and I finally decided to play my favorite episode, Weapon Bush, episode 81.
What the fuck?
Why did we? I don't even know. Weapon Bush.
We'll have to ask Steven about it after.
He doesn't know.
He must know.
He walks all of this out, as he should.
Weapon Bush.
Episode 81. When Georgia tells a satisfying story of how Dr. Jeffrey McDonald was caught for murdering his wife and two sweet baby angels.
Yes.
I cringed and tried to talk over the more gruesome details of Karen's Peter Curtin story so my dad wouldn't freak out and change his mind in wanting to listen and bond with me over this, quote, taboo subject. We got through the episode and I decided to play a minisode to get some laughs in. In the middle of the minisode, my dad says to me, hey, something like that happened to me. I'm sorry, I'm doing Marty's voice. I don't know.
I love it. It's perfect.
I couldn't believe it. It was finally happening to me. I paused the podcast and tried not to seem too eager. My dad tells me about this one horrible supervisor he had in the 80s when he landed a job as an assembly line worker, Who cares? She says. He said he hated a supervisor because he never did any work unless the big bosses came around and was rude to everyone he came into contact with. My dad left the factory to serve in the Air Force. And when he came back, his mom, my grandma, asked him, did you ever work with George? My dad rolled his eyes and said yes. Then my grandma proceeds to tell my dad that he was arrested for kidnapping and rape.
Oh,
she writes, so this fucking guy kidnapped a young girl from his neighborhood, tied her up in his home, and would rape her repeatedly every day.
Ew.
Sorry. When the parents held a search party to look for her, all caps, this fucking guy would be looking for her alongside the rest of his neighbors.
Yeah.
After a few weeks of being held captive, the girl managed to get away and tell authorities everything.
Yes.
Badass.
Yes.
She wrote. After the first few episodes ended, my dad turned to me and said, wow, so do they have an episode about JonBenet?
Yes, we do, sir.
We absolutely do. I'm sorry this is such a long email. I just had to share this exciting bonding moment between me and my dad. Thank you, and SSDGM, Brittany.
I love it, Brittany.
Love it.
Congratulations on finally cracking that case.
That's right.
That dad case.
That's right.
It's an exciting feeling.
It is.
It can happen to you, too.
I hate that band, though. You, too? That's stupid.
It can happen to Bono and The Edge. I'm not going to read the subject line of this.
Okay.
Hi, everyone. First off, thanks for making our parentheses or tag teaming authoring this work day is so much more enjoyable. We're glad our coworkers don't know we actually listen to a murder podcast all day instead of music, but you definitely make the day more enjoyable. Second off, confession. We are not the protagonists of the story, but it was way too good not to share with you. We live in Chicago, and this last winter was a very cold one. Near the end of January, the temperatures reached minus 27 degrees. Mm. With a wind chill, it felt like minus 50 degrees.
Mm-mm-mm-mm.
But global warming is a hoax? Okay. Literally colder than Antarctica, Alaska, and the North Pole. Because of this, the entire city shut down, and most companies let their employees work from home, which pretty much meant drinking spiked hot chocolate and watching movies.
Hell yeah.
God bless. Well, some of our friends also worked from home and during the day began hearing weird noises from their attic.
This better not be a creepypasta.
But they said friends.
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe them so far.
We'll see. They believed it was just some animal trying to escape the cold temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
So to get proof for their landlord, they stuck a selfie stick into the attic opening to try to get a photo of the animal.
Oh.
When they brought the selfie stick back down and went to look at the photo, it turned out not to be an animal, but instead the photo revealed a man crouching down in the corner trying to avoid being captured on the phone.
No.
In all caps, ugh, my worst nightmare. Turns out, this man had moved into our friend's apartment before they moved in when the unit was empty. Our friends moved in September, so they had been unknown cohabitating with this man for 5 months.
No.
5 months. Turns out, when they would go to work during the day, he would come down from the attic and live in their apartment. He used the shower, ate their food, and watched their TV. Who knows what else?
Holy shit.
The worst part was that the opening to the attic was in one of their rooms. Thank the Lord he wasn't a creepy sexual predator, and I'm so glad he never physically hurt them, but he definitely emotionally scared the bejesus out of them.
Can you imagine looking at that photo?
That photo.
Silently, and then everyone turns and runs out the door?
I mean, here's the thing. We're doubting that this could be a creepypasta. This could be based on other stories.
Who cares?
Pics, or it didn't happen. It seems like they have pics.
Yeah.
These are gettable pics.
Right.
If pos.
Yes.
Thanks for listening to this, Mary and Katie.
Do you think they kicked him out or just started charging him rent?
They're like, if you shower a couple more times a week, this is a fine situation.
Like, we're not going to make you pay like part, like half of it, because you're only staying in the crawl space.
Yeah, you just have to crouch up there.
Like, give him like a quarter or like of the rent.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
Why not? If he's not, I mean, if it's been that long and he hasn't done anything creepy to them, he's a good, pretty fucking good roommate.
How about you build some fucking stairs?
Yeah.
Mary and Katie's friends.
We've all had bad roommates. That sounds like a great roommate.
Yeah, exactly.
He waits till you're gone, lets you have your life.
Does he do the dishes? He must have, or they would have noticed.
That's a good point.
That's an amazing point, because I was in a standoff one time when I lived in Sacramento in the haunted house.
Yeah.
We would not do the dishes, and we all blamed each other, like, you're the one that never does it. And the kitchen sink was just filled with dishes all the time.
Did I ever tell you about the time I had a similar roommate situation and we were out of paper towels, and I was like, hey, we've all bought paper towels, it's your turn to buy paper towels. And she goes, I don't really use paper towels. And then she leaves me a note about borrowing something of mine in my bathroom on a paper towel. As it was, she was too stupid for it to be on purpose.
Yeah.
Because it would have been fucking pretty great. How great is that? Oh. Okay. This is from my friend, Brooke Van Poplin. So she says, hey, gang, I sent this to Georgia over 2 years ago when you still read about hometown murders. And I'm so thrilled that after many excellent stories about things found in walls, first responder stories, and I think even sinkholes, you've returned to good old fashioned murder stories from where you grew up. And this is that. This is my hometown murder story from the Detroit suburbs, where my dad was a cop and I was more than likely blasting Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation cassette from my boombox and roller skating in my basement. There are some conflicting details and stories, but this is the most reported version I found. It was November 1989 when two teenagers, Joseph Pisano, 17, and Bruce Michaels, 16, went on an armed robbery spree that claimed the lives of Rochester, Michigan residents Glenn and Wanda Tarr. The teens chose their victims at random, which is an extra layer of scary bullshit. After finishing dinner, 58-year-old Wanda Tarr, a life insurance agent, went to meet with a client and, before doing so, stopped to withdraw money from an ATM where Bruce and Joseph had been lurking around waiting for a victim. They followed her into a quiet neighborhood she was heading into and cut her off and held her at gunpoint. She was only 3 miles from her home. They forcibly robbed her for a sum total of $15 and then kidnapped her. The monsters drove her into a park in Pontiac, which is a neighboring city to Rochester Hills, and fatally shot her in the head and just dumped her body there. They neatly stacked her insurance forms next to her body. What sucks about Pontiac in that era is the sound of gunshots was nothing to rouse attention or suspicion. Mm. Then, using Wanda's ID, this is the fucking worst, Joseph and Bruce figured out how to navigate back to the Tarr's residence, where they broke into the house and told 53-year-old Glenn Tarr that they'd abducted his wife. Glenn, a GM Chevrolet executive, was tied up while they ransacked the house for jewelry and electronics. Then, kidnapping Glenn, they shoved him into the trunk of a car and stole the other two cars, a Chevy Cavalier and a Geo Prism.
Oh, what a great car. The Geo Prism.
Why don't those exist anymore?
Because they're being used as gift boxes for a lot of things.
Good. The two then drove Glenn to two other ATM machines in the area, but apparently failed to get money out of them, says one source. But another source says they got $500 total, plus the $15 they took from Wanda.
So $515 total.
Maybe just $15.
Oh, source-wise, yeah. Got it.
The assailants drove Glenn, oh, this is so awful, back to the exact place in the park where they had shot and killed Wanda, who was lying there murdered in front of Glenn when they shot him 6 times and dumped him next to his wife's body.
So they made him look at his dead wife before they killed him.
That's
fucking the definition of evil.
Remember how we asked for hometowns? We've changed our mind.
Right?
Several hours later, at 5 a.m., a neighbor called the police, noting that the Tarr's house looked suspicious. The garage was open and empty with the lights on, which is not typical. Later that morning, a woman walking her dog in Pontiac Park found the Tars' lifeless bodies. A search for the killers and stolen cars ensued, and while my dad was on patrol, he actually found one of the cars belonging to the Tars abandoned on the outskirts of Rochester, in a really rural part of town on a dirt road normally reserved for teenage, underage beer drinking and shenanigans. And then she writes, guilty. I asked my dad if he remembered if he found the Prism or the Cavalier, and he said he honestly couldn't remember. Being from Motor City, this is inexcusable to me, but whatever.
True.
As for the killers, they were clearly young and dumb, and after robbing and killing the Tars, these two psychopaths went to a dance club and bragged about what they had done.
No.
They were sloppy in every respect and picked up by police quickly. The violence and senselessness of their acts really rocked the community, and the two received maximum sentences of life without parole. Even spookier, turns out our good family friend was at a McDonald's near the Tars' house on the night they were murdered. She was with her young boys eating inside when two creepy teens came into the Golden Arches, and they eyeballed her and her kids in a way that made her feel incredibly threatened. It was Joseph and Bruce, as she found out a few days later when their mugshots appeared in the news.
Wow.
After being arrested, she went cold when she recognized them instantly. The way the murder timeline works out is that the murderers stop into Mickey D's after killing Wanda, but before killing Glenn.
Whoa.
Whether it was before they abducted Glenn and put him in, basically, it could have been while he was in the trunk outside or not. They're not sure of the timeline.
God.
And she fucking saw them in McDonald's and was creeped out by them.
They're eating food.
Yeah. They're getting a snack between murders. The Tars have 5 children, one of which has spoke out that his faith has given him the ability to finally forgive the teenage killers after all these years. Scary fucking stuff. Thank you for the many hours of twisted companionship mixed with advocacy for victims, mental health awareness, and tough talk about how we women are a force when we come together for good. Love you both, and stay sexy and try not to be the victim of absolute bullshit you have no control over.
Yeah.
From Burke Van Poplin. And she has a podcast that's a bunch of friends of mine called Sidework.
About waitressing?
About waitressing and waiting tables, and they interview
restaurant stuff.
Restaurant stuff.
That's great.
Yeah.
God, that's so... Here's the thing. It's like... How did they find each other, those two teens?
Right.
And how did they both realize? I want to know the dynamic between the two of them.
Yeah.
It's like the DC Sniper, where you're like, this isn't common.
No.
How are the two of you together?
You're both perfectly okay doing this.
Right.
Like the Columbine shooters. It's just like, you're both, yep, and moving forward without the fucking second thought.
Right.
It's insane.
And there's so many chances to stop, to go, oh my God, that just happened, and that's the worst thing of all time, I'm running, or something, and it doesn't. It's just so creepy.
It escalates.
Yeah. Here's my last one, and we'll fold McDonald's back into
it. Oh.
Because we did ask for drive-through stories, remember?
Yeah, this is weird.
I got a couple good ones, okay. But this one I love. Hi, Karen, Georgia, and sweet furry angels. No. Have I got a creepy fast food story for you? Okay, so when I was 16, I had just gotten hired at McDonald's. In the car, on the way to my first shift, my mom, Canadian, my mom says to me, did I ever tell you about the CIA agent in the drive-thru? I said no, and she proceeded to tell me the story of when my uncle worked at a Burger King drive-thru in the town of Surrey, British Columbia. FYI, I asked my uncle to fill in some of the blanks in the story when I knew I was going to write you.
Great. Fact checking.
Right?
We should try it sometime.
This is basic true crime reporting, and you've done it great. Who, what, when, where, how.
That's it.
It was sometime in the late 80s, and my uncle was working at the front counter when a woman pulled up to the drive-thru and handed the girl at the window a note that said, call this number and tell them I'm being followed. The lady sped off, and the girl opened the note, which said something like, I work for the CIA and I'm being followed, call this number. Since this is Canada, the manager called the good old RCMP to have them investigate. Soon, the small town Burger King was swarmed with cop cars and RCMP officers who were all deciding whether or not to call the number themselves. Dude. Or forget about it, since the lady was probably just a crazy person. Well, they end up calling the number, and it turns out to be a, all caps, direct line to the CIA or the Secret Service.
Oh my God.
And then in parentheses, my mom and uncle can't decide which one. But I think, isn't Secret Service just for protection of the president and stuff? I think
no matter what my answer is, I don't know.
We'll be wrong. Yeah, you're right. I'm guessing CIA. Okay. The officers gave the Americans on the other end all the information that they asked for and interviewed everyone working that day, including my uncle, who says it was one of the most thrilling days of his career.
Yes.
Looking back on it now, he says that the lady who came through the drive-thru was probably just some disturbed woman who happened to have the direct line to an American intelligence agency, but I guess we'll never know.
No way.
Hey, guess what, uncle? It was your experience and it's your life, but you're fucking wrong.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
You guys... Yeah.
You don't understand how hard it is to get the phone number to the CIA.
That's
because
right.
You're Canadian.
That's right.
That's like being able to call Dudley Do Right.
Yeah. No, it was totally a CIA agent.
That's a cartoon Canadian Mountie. I'm being insulting to everybody. Thank you for making my commutes to school so much more interesting. And also, your book is the best birthday present I've ever received. Stay sexy and don't give crazy people a direct number to the CIA. She wasn't crazy, goddammit.
I mean,
it's the
she
perfect
could have been
cover.
Crazy, but she was also a
she
CIA
wasn't.
Agent.
She was absolutely a CIA agent.
And maybe crazy, but that's okay.
You go deep cover because you don't look like a CIA agent. You don't have slick back hair. It's not some Men in Black
thing.
What a smart
thing to do to hand it to the fucking, like you're handing money. And you're like, that's so CIA.
Yes.
It's straight out of CIA 101.
And she called the number, it was the CIA.
Yeah,
what it wasn't a pizza place next door.
And I love that she fucking like bombed her by calling, like, getting the RCMP to fucking show up instead.
Yes.
So whoever's following her was like, oh, that was me.
That was absolutely her and them. And anyway, stay sexy and don't give crazy. Oh, I already said that.
Yeah.
Sorry. The only thing I didn't say is the signature, which is just the letter A.
Oh, she's in the CIA probably. That's some CIA shit right there.
That's some identity hiding motherfucking bullshit.
Okay. Mine is, this one's way less murdery than my other two have been.
Okay.
This is called the Marshmallow Incident. Lighthearted. Hello, longtime listener, first time emailer. I'm the youngest of four children. We're all very close in age and a pretty physical bunch. So there are plenty of stories from my childhood that ended in the emergency room that I could tell you about. But one of the more infamous stories took place when I was only about a year old. I know the details because it has been told to me about 1,000 times. My whole family was roasting marshmallows and palling around in the front yard one summer evening. At the time, my brother Micah was 3 and my sister Naomi was 4. Micah wanted to play with one of those plastic yellow wiffle ball bats, you know, the kind everyone had growing up.
Yep.
His little toddler arms couldn't handle holding the metal skewer with his marshmallow and the bat at the same time. So he put the pointy end of the skewer in his mouth to free up his arms.
No.
You know
Wait, sorry, how old? 3?
3.
Oh,
you know
no.
where this is going. And started reaching for the bat.
Baby kebab.
My sister was riding around on her tricycle and, like any bratty older sister, decided that she wanted the yellow bat when she noticed Micah going for it. So she rode over and tried to yank it away before he could grab it. In the process, the bat bumped into the skewer in his mouth and pushed it all the way back into his throat.
Oh.
So far that it actually poked through the fleshy skin under his ear.
Oh, no!
All right, there. Steven.
No, I don't. Steven's barfing. That's not okay.
It happened.
That's...
This isn't creepypasta.
I forget that your ears are basically connected to your mouth.
Tender bits.
Ear, nose, throat.
Doctor.
Please no.
Tender bits.
Tender 3-year-old bits.
Oh.
Just like chicken cutlets. Cut up and skewered for a delicious summertime treat.
That's right. My parents, who were presumably busy pouring themselves another glass of wine while all this went down, immediately jumped into action, threw Micah into the pickup truck, and my dad started speeding him to the closest ER. My dad was too afraid to remove the skewer himself.
Good. Micah, never remove skewers.
But little Micah was like, I don't like this and I want it gone. And yanked the skewer out while my dad was driving.
Oh.
At the ER, the doctors explained that the skewer had missed his carotid artery, the one that supplies all the blood to your brain, by less than a centimeter.
Shit.
If it had been punctured, he probably would have died. If my brother hadn't just pulled the skewer out himself, it would have been an extremely risky surgery to have removed it.
What?
Yeah. But the lady luck was on our side, and Micah was sent home 30 minutes later with a Band-Aid and a sticker. To this day, metal skewers are strictly forbidden from our house. We can only roast marshmallows with very thin and flimsy sticks we find in the yard. And Naomi still gets teased for almost killing our brother over a baseball bat.
Yep.
Thank you for keeping me entertained during long commutes and boring days at grad school. SSDGM, Hannah.
Holy shit, Hannah. That's like, that's why people believe in the Lord or a God of some kind.
Right.
Because that's crazy.
A miracle.
It's a miracle it didn't kill him on the way in. Yeah. And then a 3-year-old performed his own throat surgery.
That's right.
And lived.
I would like to congratulate Hannah for eliciting the weirdest noises I've ever heard Stephen make in my yes. fucking life.
Stephen, what was that?
I'm so sorry. It gets worse every time. Yeah. It was the flag.
Yes.
And then there was, I think, like falling off the balcony or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just more
horrifying.
But then,
are you gagging?
I think I just uttered, I think it just sounded horror.
You feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you almost like.
Yeah, I was like feeling it in my.
Yeah.
It's happening to you.
Yeah.
That's how amazing Hannah's storytelling
Hannah,
was.
Great job.
You nailed up.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Send us your fucked up, not fucked up, fucked around, fucked with stories.
All of it.
All of them.
Don't send us fucking stories.
No fucking
That's
stories.
That's not this podcast.
That's not what we're about.
That's not what we do.
You know that about us.
Stop it. stay sexy.
And don't get murdered.
Goodbye.
Elvis, you want cookie?